Any other questions or comments from members of the council? Councilman Ricks?
I'll try to keep this one brief. I know that it's not much of a consolation for the people who are seeing a change happening that is literally within, say, a stone's throw of their backyard. But I often do hear the phrase, it's not just, and it's really not just people here this evening, but all the time, different hearings of this nature, I frequently hear the phrase about something being, quote, in my backyard. Well, for better or worse, it's not actually in your backyard, because if it were literally in your backyard, you would be the one in control over it. It's a nice thing that neighbors have had a benefit of this parcel with a large part of it vacant, really only occupied by trees, grass, and nature for many, many years, and been able to enjoy that. But it is owned by someone, and that person has certain property rights. And of course, there are limits to those property rights too. That's why we have these different processes. But I also see that Warwick has to strike a balance here. I do see these condominium units and the like as something that is expanding the housing stock. And so while I think that this plan is going to need some tweaking, as expressed by some of my colleagues, I think that there are going to need to be some details that are ironed out. I think that there are certainly going to be those opportunities and proper venues for those details to be ironed out, such as making sure that the appropriate arborvitae or other barrier is installed so that neighbors have some protection of the privacy that anyone, pretty much anywhere in the city of Warwick, should generally expect, especially when a developer is coming here and asking for zoning relief. So for all of those reasons, I would be comfortable with moving forward with this evening.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other questions or comments? Can we first get a motion to put the solicitor's comments early on that we talked about, Solicitor Walsh?
As was discussed during the public hearing, I would recommend an amendment to page 1, line 16 to delete the reference to Centerville Road, and as well as on the agenda this evening, and replace it with the reference of Commonwealth Avenue.
Someone like to make that motion?
So moved.
Seconded. Motion made by Councilman Gephardt, seconded by Councilman Lattiser. Okay, any questions or comments? Okay, we're going to do a roll call vote on that. So favorable action is the motion that was just made to address the clerical error. A yes vote is favorable action. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes to amend.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, amendments? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we've discussed, you know, various stipulations and requests, et cetera, for this. And I would like to propose an amendment that if the city council passes this, that it would require stipulations or waivers that are made regarding this property, such as the walls, arborvitaes, et cetera, be recorded in the Warwick land evidence records, so that those stipulations, such as we're going to plant trees or we're going to rebuild a wall or remove it, will run with the deed of the property.
Okay, let's get motion, we'll get a second, and then, is there a second for discussion? Second by Councilman Ricks. So if we could just talk to the solicitor exactly what you're pinpointing on, Councilman Lattice.
So what I'm getting to is, as I talked about earlier, we always have these things that come before us, and people are looking for waivers. They're looking for, okay, give me an extra setback or a less setback, et cetera. They agree to this. They agree to stipulations. And then time goes on and things change. Ownership changes, whether it be commercial, residential, or otherwise. And then things don't get done. So what I'm looking to do is have something in the approval that we're going to be considering here this evening that's going to require these stipulations or agreements to be recorded in the Warwick Land Evidence Records so that it runs with the deed of the property. And then that's what they have to do. It's not like, oh, well, that was the other owners and, they thought it was a great idea, but we don't like it, so we're going to change it.
So I would recommend that this matter, it did not come up particularly fully in the public hearing portion. We will entertain.
Okay, I don't understand what you're saying.
I think we need to entertain fuller comment on this, so one from the council as well as open it, reopen it again so that folk can weigh in on it. But
so we'll reopen the public hearing because it's changing it now, so we want to make sure everyone gets an opportunity to be heard on exactly what we're voting on. So what's that?
A point of order for the city council solicitor, if I may.
Hold on one second. Hold on. So what's the next step, Sam? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. A question to the city council solicitor. I believe that it would be standard for any approval from whether it's the planning board or zoning board, any of those conditions as a standard practice for those terms and conditions to be recorded in land evidence records and run with the land, as opposed to simply being binding on the petitioner itself, correct?
Yes.
He said yes, he agrees with Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. So I wanted to second Councilman Lattiser's motion just so that we could have that discussion on the record. I believe that that may satisfy Councilman Lattiser's concern, but I would, of course, leave that to him.
Okay, yep, we already have a motion and it's been seconded. So Councilman Ricks is saying that this is already, that's already the process, what you're proposing.
So, through the chair, Councilman Ricks, what is the statute that you believe exists that will do this without us having to enter into a stipulation, either you or Solicitor Walsh?
Off the top of my head, I'm not certain that the precise statute that would be on point here. It is my experience that any of the stipulations that zoning or planning would enter into would be required to be recorded with in land evidence records at the time of the with the approval of any zoning change, but I suppose either one of my colleagues, the council solicitor, or perhaps the petitioner's attorney may be able to find that particular statute.
Mr. President, perhaps Lydia could shed light on that.
Okay. We'll hear from Lydia, again, from the planning department.
Council President, honorable members of the board. The standard is that when we have a decision, so in your packets, I believe that you have a decision letter that was recorded on January the 31st. This is a copy of the master plan decision letter. Some of the stipulations that were being referenced are relative to this letter. And at each phase of the approval process, there'll be a preliminary decision letter. There'll be a council order. The council can add stipulations to your council order, but we do have four here that I had provided as part of the submission that the board had voted on. Absolutely, there could be additions to this. That will actually be represented on the actual council order that comes from the city clerk's office. And then at each phase, so the preliminary phase, there'll be a decision letter. That decision letter does get recorded. The Historic District Commission, they also do record their decisions. I can't speak to the Cemetery Commission. I don't want to speak for them, but they will also issue an approval as far as that. And those restrictions, those requirements will be reflected on the condo documents and will also be reflected on the preliminary decision letter, which will also be recorded. And then at the conclusion of the approval process, there'll be a final decision letter. And in that final decision letter will be a culmination of all of the approvals, essentially. And then those last stipulations that need to be added are referred to, usually the landscaping, monumentation, and things of that nature. In addition to that, with the condo association, which is a little bit different, they will have condo documents. We do review those condo documents. They do not get recorded prior to the condo actually going into effect, but they are drafted. The board and our legal counsel does review those prior to them actually being, prior to receiving final approval.
So whatever decisions that we make here this evening or stipulations, what you're saying is that does in fact follow the deed on that property?
I wouldn't say the deed. I defer to the attorney relative to the deed specific, because the deed is relative to the ownership of the property, but the decision letters for the project are recorded, and those decision letters will have the stipulations reflected on them. The condo association documents are also a recorded document, and those are a legal document that's recorded that will have certain stipulations. Certainly, the maintenance of the walls, the drive being private, the private trash and recycling pickup, not allowing the dumpsters, there has to be barrel pickup. Those items will be part of the condo documents, as will the maintenance and the of the access and of the cemetery on site.
So I'm also speaking to any stipulations that the city council wants to make, such as Councilman Sinapi mentioned about apervites. I think Councilman Gebhardt mentioned something else. I spoke about the walls being repurposed or relocated, etc. Those stipulations, that is what I'm asking to have recorded in the Warwick Land Evidence Records. That can be done, right?
It can be done. I defer to the council attorney on this, only because the council can add stipulations to the council order. And then those stipulations we then can carry forward on our preliminary decision letter and make sure that the plans at that time meet the requirement. But on the so the council order is an action, an order of the board, of the council, and that is the law relative to the creation of this overlay district. I have not customarily recorded a council order, but I defer to the council attorney. I certainly would be willing to do that if that's what the preference is.
The councilman's raising efforts to add some substantive stipulations at the behest of the council. I think you need to, raise the merits of those, but it's historically not been for this insertion at this stage in the manner in which you are presenting. that it's covered by how they proceed through the rest of the planning process. So I would defer to, you know, if you would like to raise some specifics, we can discuss them, but I'm struggling to identify how it is that you would like to insert the substantive piece that you've raised.
Well, some of it I defer to my colleagues who mentioned some concerns. Mine would be the walls, and to ensure that those walls will be relocated the way they're supposed to be relocated, and those walls remain historical walls in perpetuity, as it is in our ordinances or charters right now. And other than that, I'll defer to my other colleagues if they want to have something like that recorded or not.
Mr. President, if it's appropriate, I would entertain council's thoughts on provisions about the wall.
Sure. So we're going to discuss individual things now. I'd just like to point out on number four, on the proposal here, it says that prior to preliminary plan submission, the applicant shall coordinate with the Historic District Commission regarding the stone walls on site. So it depends how deep the council wants to get on individual projects here, but there's a process in place, and individual council people or residents that are here can always contact the Historic District Commission regarding these stone walls and really dive in on exactly what you're looking for. So there already is a provision that they need to coordinate with them, and that's where the actual language would come out on this. Councilman Gephardt.
I'll just state my opinion. So I would be satisfied with the language that's currently in here, as you know, it delegates the authority to get into the minutia of the specific regulation around stone walls or landscaping or the cemetery access to, you know, the specific committees or commissions within the city, you know, whose purview is expressly focused on those areas. I think the Historic District Commission, you know, who in the charter is tasked with enforcing and coordinating with developers or really any resident who has such a historic wall in their property, to make sure that it's, you know, cared for in the way that the charter and our ordinances set out. So I would not want to see us start sort of overstepping or usurping, you know, other committees or commissions in their important role in this process. As I think, you know, there are 12 stipulations laid out in this decision letter, you know, all of which have further steps in process along the way, sort of under the umbrella of the planning department, you know, whose board, you know, looks after development, whose counsel is specifically a real estate attorney specialized in those matters. So I would fear that we're sort of out on a limb here a little bit without, no offense, adequate representation to get into the depths of the, you know, the real estate and development process. I think if there were any provisions that were not highlighted in these 12 points, you know, for example, if point 9 did not exist here, that the landscape plan shall include but not be limited to, et cetera, then I would say, you know, certainly maybe we should add something about the landscape plan. But I think those matters are covered. I've not yet heard from, you know, my points that have been made from Councilman Sinapi or Councilman Lattice or anything new that, you know, is not covered in broad strokes here. But to the points that have been made earlier, you know, this, we are at a broad stroke stage in this process. You know, they have several more hearings with the planning department to get their final approvals. There's administrative approval, certainly, that the planning department goes through all the way to the final stages. So I mean, certainly appreciate where Councilman Lattiser is coming from, because we have in this city, and I'm sure in every city, seen documents with provisions that the end result is those provisions were not met. However, the city does have the authority to refer back to these decision letters and perform enforcement. I think a good example is the solar farm by your building over there on Long Street, where there were arborvitaes planted. They all died. It was an eyesore, and it got, you know, light was shed on it, you know, through a combination of residents complaining. The news went out there, and the last time I drove by there, there were all new arborvitaes. They didn't do that out of the generosity of their hearts. That was the city enforcing agreements that had been made. So I think, you know, our role here is to look at this in the form that's here. If there was something glaring that was not included, I think we certainly should include it. I've not seen or heard anything that falls outside of these 12 points. So that would be my opinion. Take it for what it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Gephardt. And I think you did a great job of explaining that and pointing out there are already these provisions before us tonight is just the zoning. Again, I think that we need to rely on these next steps. One of the comments from a resident that came here was about the water coming down and stuff like that. Right in here is prior to preliminary approval, the applicant shall receive all state permits, including but not limited to RIDEM. So there is a lot of broad strokes in here that will be enforced if this project were to go forward. And Councilman Sinapi, I know that you had your hand up.
Yeah. So Councilman Gephardt addressed much of what I wanted to say as far as this is not only already handled, but if you look at the verbiage of the decision, it's not saying that the developer is going to be held to the fire. It's saying the property owner. So regardless of who, if ownership changes, the property owner is going to be held responsible, which is incredibly important because it is true. If it was just the developer, they just sell it off and call it a day and then we'd be out of luck. I am curious, Lydia, the Councilman Ricks had mentioned before, and I remember actually one of the apartment complexes I lived in, this was an issue. When it comes to the sanitation services, there's no, as of now, requirement that recycling services be provided. It's just sanitation services generally, based on my reading of it. So is there an opportunity post this council meeting for that stipulation to be added so that recycling is also part of that? Because if not, I would actually, I think adding that would be prudent.
I would defer to the attorney on that. There are different provisions statewide relative to the requirements for recycling and trash pickup. I certainly could add that to here as well, but I'm not familiar with what the legal requirements are. Anyone in an apartment complex or a condo complex, but certainly we could add that to the stipulation. But I defer to the attorney relative to that. Mr. Resnick.
All I could really say is whatever, in a lot of these areas, whatever the city requirements are is what we're going to follow. So we're so far away from that particular provision, but whatever they are, and if the stipulation is that we follow the City of Warwick rules or regulations or ordinances as it relates to trash pickup, we'll do that. Quite frankly, I don't know what they are.
Thank you. Councilman Snappy.
So then just to reiterate, Lydia, is there a, I guess to clarify, is there a point after this meeting where this project will become before one of the various boards, and that board can put into place the requirement that recycling be part of the sanitation services provided.
We can add
I would
that
say if that's a requirement of the town, of the city, we'll do that.
So it sounded like a yes, Lydia?
We can add that stipulation. The council also, this honorable board, can add that to their stipulation in addition to this, to the four stipulations that are here. The stipulation number two can be amended to specify that the site is required to have private barrel trash and recycling pickup. That can be amended in that manner to address the board's concern, the council's concern.
Yeah, the reason why I word it the way I do as far as whether or not a board can do it subsequently is because that's happened previously here where rather than the council imposing it, we've relied on the various boards to do so. I haven't had an issue in that regard yet, and I don't expect to have one going forward. So as long as this is going to become coming before another board, I'm fine with relying on that. I'm just, it seems to be clear based on your responses that it will in fact be before a board, post to council, and that said board can impose this additional requirement. So as long as that's the case, I don't see a reason or need to amend it tonight other than to make things take longer for the sake of taking longer and to inconvenience people for the sake of doing so. So as long as the answers to my questions are still yes, then I'm fine with it as is.
Any other additional questions for anyone who hasn't had a chance to speak yet? Councilman Lattiser, one last shot.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to make a simple request following the suggestions from Councilman Sinapi that this would be to Lydia, and it'll make me go away on the issue with regards to the stone walls, that though the rocks from or stones from those walls that are on site mm-hmm. are not removed from the site and can only be used on that location to relocate or rebuild the walls.
That certainly could be a stipulation.
That'll make me happy and
that'll certainly be a stipulation that the Historic District Commission can add. Okay. It'll be in the recommendation. And the Historic District Commission, they take their applications very thoroughly. Mm-hmm. They review them very thoroughly. So they certainly wouldn't have an issue adding any restrictions to removing the stones, the stone wall stones from the site.
And as Councilman Sinapi said, I'll rely on the discretion of the appropriate boards to ensure that that takes place. I'll withdraw my request for an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, motion to withdraw. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any other questions or comments from members of the council? Anyone like to entertain a motion? Councilman Foley. Second by Councilman Gephardt. Any questions or comments to move favorable action? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 Thank you. First passage. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.
At this time, I ask that we pause the full council meeting. We still have some committee work to get done, so we will go back into the intergovernmental committee. Thank you very much.
It is now 8:55 in the It is now 8:55 and the Intergovernmental Committee is back in session. The third item on the agenda is PCR 21-24, a resolution to the Rhode Island Department of Transportation and the State Traffic Commission requesting installation of a traffic signal or other modifications at the intersection of Centerville Road and Dunmore Road. Councilman Sinapi.
So this somewhat speaks for itself. Those who know the area, this is the entrance to Pilgrim Estates, Dunmore Road. It already was an issue, frankly. The construction is obviously making it worse. And at those, for some reason, following along at home, there's been a number of these studies now I've requested. You have at the entrance to Royal Crest, the entrance to Hardig, the entrance to Scott School, and now the Pilgrim Estates, all in a nice little row on 117, because those who drive it know it's a nightmare. The traffic pattern is utterly mangled. It just doesn't work. But because of how narrow the road is, I imagine the potential solutions are few and far in between. But it is a state road, so we can't even really do anything. So we're asking the state to step it up and actually look into this and see what they can do, and hopefully get them to actually get something done.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Questions or comments from the council? Questions or comments from the public? Hearing none, do I have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
It is now 8:57, and the Intergovernmental Committee is adjourned.
The next committee is Public Properties. Thank you.
The City Council Committee on Public Properties, Land Use, and Community Affairs resumes at 8:58 p.m. We have two items remaining on the docket. Item number two, PCR-131-23, a resolution dedicating Barton Farm as a municipal public trust pursuant to Rhode Island General Laws, Section 45-36.1-1 et sec, and as having conservation restrictions pursuant to Rhode Island General Laws, Section 34-39-1 et sec, Assessor's Plat 251, Lot 179, located at 1351 Centerville Road, for a recommendation, Councilman Snappy.
Request to hold till April 22nd meeting.
Request to hold. Let's see. I'm trying to recall. Do we need a vote on this? Okay. The request is to hold. I'm going to make a motion to hold to April 22nd. Do I have a second? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Held to April 22nd. Last item on the agenda. That is for the committee. This is also Councilman Sinapi. PCR-19-24, a resolution relative to changing the name of Plat 276, Lot 18, from One Home Loan Plaza to One Shoreham Way. Councilman Sinapi.
So this is a weird one, I realize, but it's a street of one. It's technically not even a street, but back in the late 90s, this property was given its own street, and now the property owner wishes to change it to a different name. It affects no one but them. All the various services will be informed, so no one will be negatively affected. Request favorable action.
Thank you. Comment, members of the committee? I have one question. I take it that you had already run this by fire and police just to make sure that there was no conflict with a similar name that would pose any potential confusion for emergency response calls?
My understanding is that there are no conflicts or issues.
I would imagine not. One Shoreham Way, it seems like it would be hard to confuse with existing roadways and the like. Comment, members of the council. Comment, members of the public. Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Move favorable action.
All in favor?
Aye.
And that concludes the Committee on Public Properties, Land Use, and Community Affairs at 9:01 p.m.
Thank you very much, everyone. I call the full city council back into session here. So if you're following us here on the agenda, we have done roll call, salute to the flag. We've done general communications. We heard from our special guest this evening, executive communications, and we've done the acceptance of the minutes. So now we are moving on to number one this evening on the agenda, which is the announcement of appointments. There are three announcements. These do not require confirmation. Councilman Gephardt.
Thank you, Council President. There are three, two for the Building Board of Appeals. First, Joseph A. Bucci from Ward 8 with a term to expire 1-1-2029. Second, Felix Carlone from Ward 5 with a term to expire 1-1-2029. And from the Planning Board, Michael Penta from Ward 4 with a term to expire February 22nd, 2029.
Thank you, Councilman Gephardt. Number two is appointments requiring confirmation. There are none. So now we're going to move to the consent calendar. First up is PCR 22-24, resolution relative to bids. Committee report, finance.
Favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. PCR 22-24, bid 2024-398. 2024-401, 2024-364, 2024-369, 2024-370, 2024-371, 2024-366, 2024-404, 2024-365, and 2024-363. That concludes the bid packet, Mr. President.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the bid packets that were not asked earlier this evening in Finance Committee? Okay, number two is PCR 23-24, resolution relative to abatements. Committee report, finance.
Favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Councilman Howe.
I apologize, Mr. President. I don't have the amount readily in front of me, but it was favorable action by the committee for the amount presented by the director. I have it. We have that number. Favorable action, the amount of $2,053.05.
Okay. Any questions or comments on the abatements? Okay. Next up on the consent calendar is PCR 24-24, resolution relative to claims committee report, public safety.
Recommend favorable action.
For action, Councilman Foley.
Thank you. First one is Betty
Just move Bell. It first, and we'll get a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman McElroy and Councilman Ricks. Go ahead, Councilman Foley.
All right. The first one is Betty Belmore, approve in the amount of $300. The next is Amy Chauvin, recommend approval in the amount of $193.62. Matthew Coltria, approve in the amount of $300. Linda Costa, approve in the amount of $300. Joseph DeMeo, approve in the amount of $300. Randy Miller, approve in the amount of $300. Colleen Moretti, approve in the amount of $300. And just to break our streak, David Pickering, approve in the amount of $1,950.
Thank you, Councilman Foley. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening in public safety? Okay, the consent calendar has been moved and seconded. The clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattison?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Yes. Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes consent passes.
Thank you. The consent calendar passes. Next up is referred business. That is the public hearing that we just completed. So we're now moving to unfinished business. First up is PCR 131-23, committee report, public properties.
Hold to April 22nd.
Hold to April 22nd. We're now moving to new business. First up is PCR 7-24 sub A, committee report, intergovernmental.
Favorable action, Mr. President.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley, Councilman Lattiser, Councilman Gephardt, Councilwoman Travis. And I believe we have additional co-sponsors on this, correct? Looks like everyone is also a co-sponsor, so let the record show that. Any questions or comments on PCR 74-7-24A? This is the resolution to the General Assembly enacting legislation amending state law to provide the mayor of the city of Warwick with an appointment to the Rhode Island Airport Corporation Board of Directors. Okay, hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Yes. Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, motion passes.
Thank you, motion passes. Number two this evening is PCR 19-24, committee report, public properties.
Recommend favorable action.
For action, Councilman Sinapi. This is 19-24 resolution relative to changing the name of Plat 276 lot 18. Favorable action. Second by Councilman Lattiser and Councilwoman Travis, Councilman Howe. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening in the Public Properties Committee? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Yes. Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Yes. Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, motion passes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Number three this evening is PCR 20-24. This is a resolution requesting the General Assembly to enact legislation exempting the taxation of the real property and tangible personal property of the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Committee report, intergovernmental.
Favorable action, Mr. President.
For action, Councilman Sinapi.
So I request favorable action.
Do we have a second? Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Councilman Sinapi.
So just as a, it's not really housekeeping, but it's kind of just an FYI. Because it's obvious that we do need standards for these, and because we don't want any nonprofits being treated unfairly, like we shouldn't be picking and choosing which one we like, which one we don't, which one we think is better than the other one. It's a bad idea, but we also don't want to say yes to the mediation group and then no to the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence just because they happen to be second and that's the reason to say no. That's ridiculous. There's kind of a catch-all solution where right now these things all have to go to the General Assembly anyway, and there's nothing stopping us from communicating with our delegation to hold on to both of them, so also the Center for Mediation one, until on our end we put together the standards that we should have anyway, frankly, whether it be via us or via Neil. And Neil actually already seems to have a good handle on it, so we might want to just defer to him on that one. But that way, neither the center nor the coalition are unfairly burdened just because they happen to be the first groups around. Neither of them technically really wasted any time because they've gotten through the first hump of things. And I'm rather confident that any standards thought up will fit both the organizations pretty easily, considering what they are. I think that's kind of a given. So I'm not worried in that regard. So it kind of addresses most, if not all, the concerns raised. And it also addresses things that frankly have to get handled one way or another anyway, eventually. So there's no reason for us to kick the can and just wait till the next entity comes and to say, no, you're the one we're going to arbitrarily do it to.
Okay, thank you, Councilman. So just to summarize, you have moved favorable action. You're asking for favorable action, but you're saying that you're going to reach out to our colleagues in the General Assembly, the Warwick delegation, and say, this is coming to you. However, we would like to have some future conversations with the assessor's office, maybe come up with a policy going forward or our plans going forward. We need some additional time, correct? So you're still asking for favorable action, but you're also going to ask for some additional time once it goes up to the State House.
Correct.
Okay. Any questions or comments on that? Councilman Gephardt.
Okay. I want to start by saying I fully support all of the work that you do. I made the same comment the first time we saw one of these come across our desks. I voted no the first time. I'm going to vote no now. I fully support an effort to have a standard for sort of a level playing field for all the nonprofits across the city. Whatever that means, I'm not a tax expert, but something that was administrative that, you know, served the purpose of, you know, helping nonprofits universally achieve their mission and feel supported within the city, without, you know, each one needing to come in here one by one and ask for special dispensation. So I'll leave it at that. So, you know, I would say at a minimum, if we're going to follow Councilman Sinapi's plan to not further muddy the waters up at the State House, that we just hold this for a number of months until we can have something come before us. But I think better would be to vote this down and to do some work that would, you know, benefit the Coalition Against Domestic Violence, as well as the Center for Mediation, as well as others in the city. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Mr. President, I'd like to request a fiscal note on this item.
Okay, Solicitor Walsh, can you walk us through that process, please?
I can pull up the pertinent section, but prior to the consideration of the council, we need to be upon the request of a fiscal note. We would need to have that answer. The request being made at this moment, is unclear if the tax assessor or anyone can speak to the value of what the item before us presents. And if we don't have that available, the recommendation would be to hold this item to the next meeting until, and then where a fiscal note can be presented in accordance with the ordinances. So,
okay, is there anyone here from the administration that can speak to the fiscal impact that this would have?
Good evening, Council President. Aaron McAsee, Mayor's Chief of Staff. Councilman, I personally can't speak to the fiscal impact, but to the best of their professional ability, I'm sure the Finance Director and Assessor would be happy to put one together at the Council's request.
Thank you, Chief. Councilman Howe.
So I understood the solicitor say to hold, but we can still make our comments because some of us waited to make our comments, and had I known that the councilman was going to ask for a fiscal, I would have asked the respect of giving people who haven't spoke the opportunity to speak, so we can still speak on this.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. I am, as someone who is, you know, I take nonprofits that are near and dear to me. I'm a bit firm believer in nonprofits, but I have to agree wholeheartedly with what Councilman Gebhardt said. There has to be a standard. I think a standard throughout the city is appropriate. I would also like just to identify some things from all the conversations that were going on. The building that this one nonprofit is located in is not owned by the nonprofit. They are lessees to a property. So that, to me, just kind of gets into the woods. I understand they're also asking for the tangible personal property, but that kind of gets into the woods of having now a third party involved in the tax relief. The other part of this also goes to, I'm not 100% comfortable passing something and asking the state, because I understand that what Councilman Sinapi is saying. I personally am not comfortable passing something and asking the state to wait until we get an opportunity to come up with something, because a lot of things at some point, things are going to move fast and they're going to want to get things done, and they're going to want to be proactive. And I just get nervous that it'll get lost in the shuffle of the paperwork. I would like to see a standard set forward. There are a lot of nonprofits that are operating within our city, all doing great work. They are recognized nonprofits by the federal government, and they are recognized nonprofits exempt from sales tax from the state government. The property that we are speaking of, or the property that is under lease right now, and the tangible products within that property are, you know, as I said, it becomes a third party issue, and that's very concerning to me. So I will vote against this, not as a reflection on any type of nonprofit. I'm voting against it because I'm hoping that we can do something better. And and the final thing I wanted to mention is I found it very interesting, at no fault of this nonprofit, I found it very interesting that the comment was made, for 24 years there were no taxes paid, and now they are. And one of the things that we have looked to do within the city is clean up, which goes to also the conversation from the audience. I would like to know, I know that like the tax rolls have been reviewed. I know that the assessor's office has done a very good job of cleaning up, if you will, and that we'll probably have more cases like this that come before us. So to reinforce what Councilman Gephardt said, it would be smart for us to have a guideline, or for the assessor's office to have a guideline, or, you know, of what they feel would be appropriate moving forward. So thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. And Solicitor Walsh is recommending, because we weren't able to get that answer on the fiscal note. Not recommending, but advising.
For those following, the Warwick City Code of Ordinances has a series of provisions in Chapter 30 relative to fiscal notes, Sections 30-5, 6, and 7, which essentially says that upon the request of a councilperson or the mayor, any ordinance or resolution having an effect on revenues or expenditures or fiscal liability of the city shall be accompanied by a brief explanatory statement prior to the consideration of the city council. I shortened the verbiage there, and that furthermore, it would like to know what the projections are for the subsequent fiscal years as prescribed in Section 6 as well, and for it to be returned by the to the Finance Committee before the hearing. The intent of the ordinance is to give the council members greater clarity into the potential fiscal impact that could be absorbed. In the case here, the shifting of a fiscal liability from one taxpayer to the broader collection of taxpayers across the city. So the intent of the ordinance is to allow that information to be further brought forward prior to formal action or consideration by the city council. So with that said.
So a couple things. One, so the points aren't falling on deaf ears. The problem is we have an entity situated similarly, if not identically, to the last one that was approved, where they were a tenant. They were not the landlord. They are a nonprofit entity helping the community at large, a fact which no one debates. And as far as when it comes to the General Assembly, I personally have communicated with sponsors and had them hold things before. It's not complicated, it's not difficult. The only people that might lose out is us getting things passed at all, because if we take too long, they won't stop holding it. We all know there's a deadline. So that would be on us. That's the only people that might get left in the dust, and that obviously doesn't impact the taxpayer at all. It only would negatively impact the entities in question. And when it comes to the fiscal note, so I have their tax bill here, which is the fiscal impact of said exemption. So if that's what's needed, we have it. It is interesting that this is coming up now when it didn't come up in the last one, nor did it come up in the weeks that preceded this meeting, and is somewhat concerning that it was this particular entity that it was chosen to be brought up in, but to each their own. But given the existence of the tax note, which is what the tax assessor would be able to tell us, is, well, how much taxes would be forced to be burdened on the average person as a result? Well, $3,624.26 would no longer be paid for by this entity. So now it would be to go into the fact that now the general taxpayer would be responsible for it, diffused amongst the entire population of Warwick. That's the fiscal impact. So given that we have that, and given that we have at times proceeded without a formal fiscal note, when we have had the information it provides, I would request we proceed, and I would request a ruling from the chair in that regard. And if the solicitor wants to tell me this doesn't qualify, then I withdraw my request.
Thank you, Councilman. So Councilman Lattice or Councilman Sinapi has presented information relative to the tax liability borne by the most recent tax bill of the entity. At this time, it would be, I guess, first opportunity would be, does this suffice to you, and would you withdraw your request for a fiscal note?
So through the chair to Councilman Sinapi, where and how did you arrive at that number that you spoke about? 600 and some on dollar tax impact. How did you arrive at that number?
$3,624.26, because that's what the city of Warwick told them was the tax bill.
That's what the city of Warwick is what?
Told them was the tax bill.
Is that on the total building? Or just the space that's being occupied? We're talking about a triple net lease here, is what we're talking about. So is, do you have the square footage of the entity? And I mean, if you do, and that's what it is, then that's what it is. But I'm asking for how you came up with that calculation of dollars and cents that you came up with, based on what?
That you'd have to take that up with the city of Warwick as far as how they compute their property tax bill, but that's what they told the Rhode Island Coalition was their tax bill for the year.
So you're saying that the coalition received a tax bill of how much was it?
$3,624.26.
And you're saying that's what the answer is to the fiscal note?
I'm saying my understanding is it meets the requirements as far as it tells you the fiscal impact. $3,624.26 when it comes to the entity in question, specifically the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence. If there's other information sought, such as the impact to other entities or other property owners or other lessees, that this does not provide.
So based upon what Councilman Sinapi has said, it appears as though the impact on that space is $3,625. But I think there's a greater concern. And the greater concern is if it's approved for one entity, this could very well continue to come to us, entity after entity after entity, and nonprofits, all looking for an exemption for taxes. Now, perhaps that can't be included in my fiscal note. And if it can't, fine, then I'll rely on what Councilman Sinapi has presented for the taxes that this entity has been charged.
So the intent of the ordinance is to make sure that we have this information. If we read a black letter of the ordinance, it is expressing the impact to the city, and it does not specify that a burden shifting to the taxpayers. It's impacting on the city. The city imposes a general tax across everybody. The city would be made whole. So the requirement of the fiscal note was intended to talk about what is the impact here, but if we are going to force the issue, the city, they're going to absorb it in other ways. So the city is ultimately made whole. So there's an argument that the fiscal impact of this is zero to the city itself as an alternate.
It's zero approach to the city, but it's not
the discussion
zero to
what you were chasing was to allow everyone to know what the impact to other people within the city are.
Right, because it's not zero to the taxpayers. So I guess from the legal position, and correct me if I'm wrong, Solicitor, Councilman Sinapi has essentially provided the answer to the fiscal note request that I've made.
The councilman has presented information that I think you were looking for as it relates to what the annual burden shifting is, which may not necessarily be the same question of the fiscal note to the city, but we wanted to list that information onto the record for the discussion.
Yeah, and just to be clear, Councilman, this is their personal property tax that they are hit with every year.
When you say their personal property tax, personal property tax meaning the fiscal property?
Personal property tax, which we charge as a city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reading what the top of the bill says. That way there's no confusion.
It's what, please?
I'm just reading what the top of the bill says. That way it's not up to me phrasing it correctly or not.
Well, that's not what my intent was when I was asking for a fiscal note, and that was my question. Can the fiscal note request that I'm making pertain to not just, I think it's important if we're going to be voting on this, I think it's important that we know what the big picture impact could be. That's what I'm speaking about. When right now we're talking about an item that's $3,625 as it impacts the tax roll. What I'm speaking about and my concern is in the bigger picture. I've already told everyone, you know, what my feelings are.
We understand that. So yeah, let's pause on that.
Okay.
Being invited, we should enter. There's a motion to hold at this time for the finance director to provide additional information. That is that would take precedent over Councilman Sinapi's. Remember, Councilman Sinapi did move it favorable, and we did have a second on that.
We have a motion for favorable before us. If the Councilman Sinapi is amenable, would it be acceptable to hold for one meeting and have the fiscal impact produced by the finance director?
I will accept an involuntary hold only. So.
Okay, so there's a motion to hold until the next meeting. Do we have a second to that? Second by Councilman Ricks. So the clerk is going to call the roll to hold this item until the next meeting, which is
March 18th.
March 18th. So that's what we're voting on at this time, is a motion to hold to March 18th and a request that the finance director gives us a fiscal note on this item. The clerk will call the roll on the motion to hold.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
No.
Mr. Gephardt?
No.
Mr. Howe?
No.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I said Mr. Sinapi. I can't hear you. No? Did he say?
Councilman, can you go on the mic? She can't hear you.
No.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Good.
So 5-4.
5-4.
The motion is held. Next up is PCR 21-24, a resolution relative to the Department of Transportation Committee Report Intergovernmental.
Favorable, Mr. President.
For action, Councilman Sinapi. Second by Councilman Howe, Councilman McElroy, Councilman Lattiser. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening? Madam Clerk, we have moved in second for a motion on favorable action on PCR 21-24. And Councilman Sinapi moved it, and it was seconded by Councilman Howe, Councilman McElroy, and Councilman Lattiser. Okay, and the clerk will call the roll.
Ms. McAllister?
Yes.
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 Thank you. Motion passes. Ward 1, anything to docket under unanimous consent?
Pass.
Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
Ward 4?
Pass.
Ward 5? Ward 6? Ward 7 passes. Ward 8? Ward 9? Councilwoman Travis. All those in favor to move in the docket session say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? We are now in the docket session. Ward 1, anything to docket this evening?
Pass.
Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
Ward 4?
Pass.
Ward 5? Ward 6? Ward 7 passes. Ward 8? A resolution to the General Assembly to enact Caden's Law? Intergovernmental. Ward 9? Pass. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.